This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, August 20th, 2021. We have the market recovering after a deepening of the sell-off yesterday. So the latest update on the technicals for the S&P 500 at least. And we don't have a broad market, however, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Kind of interesting to notice, we've sort of cascaded from one Fib retracement to the other. So you notice that previous, let's call it Wednesday low, right around the 38.2% retracement. Yesterday's on the 50 at around 43.50. And we have the 55-day moving average. I've been highlighting in recent calls that line where I'm doing all the red circles there on slide two. It's been tested so many times all year. Coming in a bit lower, so around 43.32, and then you see the next Fib is 61.8 Fib at 43.20. So basically, yes, a bounce. It's pretty modest relative to the scale of the sell-off so far, but we would, we need to see these 55-day, a couple of closes below that, as well as 61.8% retracement to argue we're starting to see a bigger capitulation that could be leading to a market correction. Just wanted to note on Brett, before I turn it over to you, Peter, that we saw for example, the Russell 2000 actually closing below its 200-day moving average for the first time in a while, and it never really participated in this last leg up of the broader market. And a very different picture. I noticed yesterday a lot of our baskets had done quite well on a very ugly day, and now we have a recovery day, a recovery back to slightly unchanged to even slightly positive, and yet our baskets are doing poorly. It's a very interesting difference in performance there, I would argue.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our theme baskets are, of course, very much growth-oriented. So, and it's not driven by interest rate sensitivity. It's just a technical sell-off. There is a risk aversion is increasing a little bit here, and specifically in Asia. And as you can see here on the small insert on slide two, the month-to-date performance is just very red now, and with bubble stocks taking the lead on the downside, bubble stocks are down 16% year-to-date. The bubble stocks basket tracks the Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation Fund pretty highly there, so interesting correlation. And please note as well, we're getting very close to a milestone event here on our theme basket, so the gaming basket is only 2.5% up from a year ago, so maybe we'll soon have our first equity growth segment being negative on a year-to-year basis. I know Ole is on a tight deadline, so I will I'll quickly skip to the next theme on equities before we segue to you, Ole. So China just enacted a new law overnight. It's a new data privacy law, and you're seeing Alibaba bouncing a little bit back and forth in the session in Hong Kong, but lower from the previous close. It was also down in the U.S. session. Other Chinese technology stocks are feeling the heat, and I've put in a weekly chart here on the CSI 300 to really get the perspective. And we're down 9% for the year, and a lot of flow. I should have put in Kospi 200, the benchmark index for equities in South Korea. That one is now trading at the same price level we had on January 1st in South Korea. So two pro-cyclical. Big Asian economies and big equity markets are on the down move here, so it's very interesting. It's the number one question I get when I have client talks is about what do I do with my Chinese stocks and how do we see things. I agree with your assessment yesterday, John, that the risk are certainly increased for a decline in equities. If you take a drawdown profile over since the lows back from March last year, we've constantly created smaller and smaller drawdowns in the MSCI world. I think it would be very good for this market to actually get a mild correction of 5 to 7%, a little bit high volatility. And I think the risk is coming out of Asia. So I really encourage you, everyone, if you're not normally looking at these equities or indices, I encourage you to do so.
All right. And we'll talk a little bit about that article I wrote yesterday and that general risk we are seeing, broadening risk of a significant market correction among the drivers. And we had a couple of charts, or at least one chart in the article, which I'll try to include in today's podcast notes. So look for that. Noting that a number of markets have been rolling over really since the bubble stocks peaked out in January, February of this year. We saw copper peaking out in May and oil doing so in early July. And both of those are breaking down. What's your latest sense of how much the energy is picking up on negativity, at least, and commodities here, sort of in sympathy with a couple of other things that we'll also be talking about, the stronger dollar and of course China as well, breaking down.
Absolutely, John, and you basically named it, and Peter as well, with the slowdown we're seeing in these stock markets in Asia. It's been a tough week for the commodity space. The Bloomberg Commodity Index down around 3%. China centric commodities taking the biggest beating, led by iron ore, which is down more than 12%. I just got the table here on slide 6, where you can take a look at some of the negativity that's come in. And it is undoubtedly growth worries in China. It is the COVID-19, which is still causing shutdowns across some of these major economies. That's creating another short-term level of uncertainty, which obviously will fade sooner or later. But it's coming at a time where we have these growth worries. We have the dollar, which then strengthened this week on the taper expectations. All in all, just leading to profit taking and some risk off across these markets. So, if I pinpoint one, you mentioned copper. Key levels that we reached yesterday, we're bouncing from that 200-day moving average. We have to remember copper more than doubled in price from the low point last year, and up until recently it only corrected 10%. So we have not come anywhere near levels where you can start to worry about the uptrend being at risk. So I think the metal space, especially those that are focusing on the transformation towards less carbon or more carbon or a less carbon future, will continue to remain supported. Oil prices, you mentioned as well, it is we're at the low end of the range, basically. I don't see any much further downside risk here, because again, who can control oil prices? That's OPEC Plus. They've been doing that brilliantly now for the last 14 months. And they will do so again if prices continue to slump. They will then reduce supply, thereby stabilizing the market. So I think we are at the low end of the current range in crude oil. Copper, again, close above the 200-day moving average, could take some of the nervousness out of the market. And then just finally, one comment on gas. Dutch gas is down almost 10% this week. There was comments from Russia yesterday basically saying that could supply 10% of the annual capacity through the Nord Stream 2 line before year end, if and when they get the permission to do so. So we're basically a stick and a carrot, and the market took that as a promise that we could start to see increased flows over the coming months, and that took the sting out of the very, very, very rapid rise we've seen in gas recently.
All right, thanks for that update. And we had oil peaking out again early July, copper before that, and some interesting breakdowns. And just to take us back to this article we looked at, encourage folks to have a look. It's a look at a number of factors, most of which we've just mentioned. And one of the ones that's not quite there yet in terms of really flashing red, and has often in the past, you know, been pretty good at coinciding, at least in coinciding terms, and showing a risk of a significant breakdown in markets. And that is the global risk indicator. So it's not really flashing red yet. It's going, of course, in the wrong direction. You can see that on slide 4. It's also in the article. Part of the reason around this is that while, for example, VIX has picked up, and that is one of the inputs, things like FX volatility, I think a lot of the problems there, FX volatility very low, I think a lot of problems there are that's very Eurodollar centric and very Eurodollar weighted. If you look around the periphery of some of the FX, we're seeing some pretty big moves, as I'll get to in a moment. Other inputs, though, still not really flashing and warning signals, but I'm not sure how good they are for this cycle relative to previous cycles. And that is namely credit, which is, again, going the wrong direction, but in extremely slow fashion, unless you're looking out in Asia. We've seen some key credit stories in China, especially. And the spreads have been widening there, and in some cases viciously. So we have an Evergrande situation that's quite interesting, where the officials of that company, the largest property developer in China, met with Chinese regulators from the PBOC and another regulatory agency, and the sort of the statements being issued by these regulators, a pretty strong reprimand from Evergrande's behavior. So I'm wondering if they have some murky problems on their balance sheet they're not quite being forthcoming with, or revealing the information in a slow fashion. It's still a situation that needs to be watched, really critical there for further systemic style risks. And there was a note in a, I believe it was a Bloomberg article I came across this morning, that the way that the Chinese authorities are dealing with this, of course, wanting to avoid contagion across asset classes, some kind of big systemic risk scenario, is creating some confusion, and investors are unwilling to invest in some cases because they're not sure what the next regulatory action will be. So that's the risk on the downside from that approach. Just rounding off on FX, you can see on slide 5, the latest trend developments. We're getting some pretty strong trends coming in here with the Aussie at -6. I'm looking at the Scandis here. They're breaking down, and certainly the Euro Stoxx above a key resistance level. We could see an acceleration there to the upside. That's traditionally a very risk on, risk off exposed currency. And would add that the dollar may be a key driver here. So we saw a sort of relief coming into at least U.S. equity markets quite strongly yesterday, even though we had a pretty ugly session in elsewhere overnight. But the dollar is still quite very much pinned sort of at the highs or near the highs of this move. In the case of Dollar Canada, making aggressive new highs, as I show on the chart there. 130, by the way, there is a massive, massive bubble in Dollar Canada. So but just look at the remarkable weekly bar we've seen for Dollar Canada this week. But everything in FX more or less aligning with risk on, risk off. The yen picking up pace again. So we saw it briefly weaker in the wake of the FOMC minutes, but now matching the dollar in terms of gaining across the board. Also keeping an eye on gold. I think gold is getting technically interesting if it closes above 1800. All right, peruse that article at your leisure. We've got some other stories that are interesting. I know one of your hobby horses, Peter, is the future of farming. This is something you've looked into before, and these trends are quite some interesting. But it's an interesting story. So let's get away from the whole broad risk on, risk off, and this is an interesting story here.
This is very specific and tied maybe to some shape or form the future of agriculture sector. So the company called Arrow Farms, it's a US-based company, is one of the companies in vertical farming that have been existed the longest. It's going public today via a SPAC, Spring Valley Acquisition Corporation. You can see the chart and the ticker code as well on slide 7. It's the first vertical farming company that goes public. I think it's a major milestone. So what the vertical farming is basically big indoor facilities, often the size of two US football fields in terms of size. They use LED lighting, so create this artificial sunlight, and then you have water being perspirated into the air, and it's recycled. You don't use any pesticides or any other types of fertilizers. You use algorithm to sort of fine tune the lightning cycle for the plants to get optimal growth, etc. It's a very scientific, and by the way, the current agricultural sector is also very scientific, but I think this just takes it to a totally new level. I think it has great potential. I don't know whether Arrow Farms will be the ultimate leader of this industry. We'll have to see. I haven't looked at the numbers. I'm very curious to see when they go public, but I think there's a great scope. I showed Steen Jacobsen, our CIO, a research paper from a big, it was government funded in the US. It was done within the big, I can't remember, one of the big government organizations. A lot of physicists were looking at, can you do this vertical farming on crops like wheat and barley, etc.? And the current technology on LED and the cost of electricity is still doesn't make it economically viable yet. You can do it for salad, and that's where Arrow Farms is, but for crops, we need the LED technology to improve significantly more from the current levels. But they said that if we could get to a certain level where it becomes economically viable, then you can actually harvest wheat and barley 3 times a year in these indoor facilities, and you could stack an entire farm in a 10 stories building. So, and as you can imagine, then you can release a lot of land back to nature. I think it has fascinating possibilities. So maybe a little bit of a positive story, given everything that goes around in the world with the slowdown in Asia, the Delta variant, Afghanistan, and what have you. So enjoy that story. And if you think it's interesting, follow this company when they go live trading today when the US market opens.
All right, cool stuff. Yeah, I don't think certainly on the macro calendar anything worth mentioning, and certainly not no market catalysts for today, as you can see on slide 8. But I've populated the calendar with hopefully a relatively complete look at the highlights for next week, where we have already on Monday, we have the flash PMIs for August for the Eurozone. Quite interesting there as we're working into a more comprehensive opening up, despite the Delta variant and the U.S. Jackson Hole Symposium. Very key there for any signals, especially from whatever Powell speech. I've not seen a timing on his speech yet, so of course we'll update you on that. And then at the tail end of the week on Friday, the most interesting data points of the week, the July PCE inflation data, and then the refresh of where confidence is, at least according to the University of Michigan sentiment measure on Friday, to see how that stacks up. So plenty to keep us busy. I think it's all about the bigger backdrop and where flows are taking this market right now, not about macro data for sure. So more than ever, as we're heading into a weekend after a pretty nervous week, stay very careful out there. We'll see where things stand on the other side of the weekend. And safe trading out there.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.